Howdy, Street Fight listeners. Thank you for tuning in. If this is your first time, you'll get comfortable very quickly. We hope that you like the idea of radically changing the entire world as we know it. As long as you are down with that, then you're our comrade. My name is Brett Payne. My co-host tonight is Brian Quinby, as is every night for the last 6 years. We've been doing Street Fight Radio out of Columbus, Ohio, the 614 area code, here on WCRS FM 92.7, 24/7, wherever you're at in the heartland. You can tune in on your radio dial and get access to all of the amazing programming that we have. So check out WCRSFM.org for even more podcasts and things to listen to than you could ever imagine. We are here after an amazing show. We just went and saw Day Creeper, Flesh World, and Sheer Mag all in one night, all together. We're completely lit after that and ready to do a proper street fight. Like, I feel pumped up. Like, I feel energized after seeing a fucking show tonight, a concert that maybe you want to break free and touch somebody in, like, an aggressive manner. So,
you can't do that at these concerts, man. That's over. The youngsters don't like to mosh. They don't like to bump into each other, man. You got to go see Korn to get that experience. You're so hung up on the Korn and ICP experience. You're like, why aren't these people whooping each other's asses out here?
That's absolutely true. I have to say, to Columbus, Ohio, tonight, you let me down. You should have been a little bit more violent. I feel like what was going... And you know what? I see folks that like music and that dedicate a lot of their life to music, but when they see it live in person, they can't seem to let go. You know, like, I'm a person that lets go. I'm the first person on the dance floor because I'm like, we're eventually going to be all out here. You know, like, we're all going to be cutting a rug at some point. So might as well be the first one so I get the maximum amount. Not the best. I mean, not like the best showing from a Columbus audience tonight, I have to say.
Yeah, I mean, part of me is like, you should be a they should be a little embarrassed about this. Brett was moving his ass off and I did my little thing where I move my head forward and backwards and kind of move my foot up and down. It's a move. I do moves.
Yeah, you have moves.
I have moves. I'm not afraid to do moves out on the dance floor, but we got to start bumping into each other more, peoples.
Yeah. Well,
it was packed, too. It was packed good. Fucking house, and everybody was enjoying themselves, and it was a good show. Let's run into each other a little bit, too. We're all right here next to you. We're all packed in here. Feel better. You get a little breathing space when you're running into each other. I guess we're saying that, though, and I would have been like the most Godzilla person in that pit.
Yeah, but you would have been. I mean, you would have acted accordingly. Like, I just feel, in a way, I just want to give people a reason to cut loose. You know, we buy tickets to shows and people put on musical shows so that you will go absolutely bananas. And, like, this is your chance to do it. Like, no one from work is watching. There's no metrics or anything happening. Tonight's the night that you can, like, shove people that you don't even know.
Right. And that's also, like, that is what, that is kind of what you're supposed to be doing. That's what the Korn people have figured out. It's like, they fucking go to work. They take 2 hours of PTO so they can get out of work at 3:00. They get in the car. They drive home. They put on their most offensive T-shirt and their best pair of jeans, and they're going to a goddamn concert. That's their night, is going to a concert. And there are times where I feel like I go into these places, and most people, I know everybody likes the music. You don't pay $10, $15 to get into a concert if you don't like the music. You know what I mean? I don't think anybody's doing that. But I think that there are a lot of people who are like, yeah, man, I'm just here to check out the music and then maybe do something else later. You know?
Yeah, I'm going to totally jet out of here if there's something cool going on.
This is like, it's like what happened with me a few years ago, Brett. I used to go to the movies a lot. And it stopped being special at all, to the point where, like, I would just go in and not even care where I sat. You know, like, it was like, who cares what this experience is like? I'm just going to see another movie tomorrow. You know what I mean?
But it was good. I don't mean to shit all over Columbus. I just wanted it to be more raucous. There was a whole bunch of people that showed up to support the band, and they did an amazing show. Sheer Mag was so fucking good. It was incredible.
Sheer Mag fucking rules. That was a really good show. I was really into that.
And it was, I mean, I don't have to be like the over aggressive bro at this thing. Like,
yeah, you do. That's what you want to do. I do. Right?
Like, I just want to start like aggressively bumping into people and eventually starting like a riot.
I wish they would rope off mosh pit sections at concerts, but actually, no, I don't. That's like a little.
No, it's natural, man. You gotta be anarchist about this, man. Yeah, like, it develops its own like perimeter.
Yeah. Okay, while we're on Ohio, we need to address something that we always have to address about Columbus, Ohio, Brett. And there has been another case of police brutality in our city. Of course.
We got bad cops.
We got a real problem here.
We got centrist cops. Like, we have middle of the road where people are, you know, I can't say the police are so bad. And it's like, well, that means they're going to do super bad shit.
Yeah.
Like, if you give them that much of an inch, they're going to take a mile.
Yeah, they don't have like a LAP. Well, they're getting one, though. I really feel like, is it just us? But they're getting a more LAPD, NYPD. Because those are
in the activist community. Yeah. In the activist community, they are.
And everybody knows it. And like, everybody in the activist community knows exactly what's going on. But so I want to, this is from Raw Story, so it's probably going to be poorly written. But I wanted to make sure that we need to, you know, these are stories we like to keep up with. Not that we'd like to keep up with. I would prefer it if they didn't happen anymore.
Yeah, I would love to have a barbecue for no police brutality this summer in Columbus.
Well, it's Jump Out Boys, too. This is Jump Out Boys.
Oh, God.
Actually, which is a... So, can you explain what Jump Out Boys are?
Well, they have them in D.C. They have them in Columbus. They have them all over... In Columbus, they call them the Summer Policing Program. But this is like... This is unidentified officers in an unidentified car. That are, you know, they go to Kohl's, they get $45 to go buy like a hip outfit, and they go spend that money, and they ride through the hood, and they just jump out and start arresting people.
Yeah. So cell phone video recorded by bystanders in a Columbus, Ohio store appears to show police officers using excessive force on a black man who police said was resisting arrest. According to NBC4i, the man's name is Timothy Davis. The video shows officers repeatedly kicking and punching Davis while he was down. Police claim Davis tensed up to fight and took officers down with him. First of all,
it's natural. It's so natural.
Right. Tensed like, up to fight, Brett. That's their standard is that this guy tensed up to fight when two people jumped out of a car and went running towards him.
If my four-year-old daughter starts grabbing my thigh aggressively, like, I get into, like, a power stance where I'm like, no, you can't fuck with this.
Sometimes we get, I mean, and again, that's the famous tweet I think I bring up every week now, is that, like, people that aren't trained in conflict escalation are being asked to, or conflict de-escalation are being asked to de-escalate things with guys that are trained in it, with the police. It's like, okay, you random people just jumped out of the car and started running to me. I want you to understand that I'm in a very laid back state. I'm like, just remember, if you touch me the way that I'm looking so relaxed right now, that'll be bad karma, dudes. You know, that's what they want, I guess. You know what?
No, the police were just outside, like, chomping on some Jack in the Box. Like, they were just outside eating fast food, and then, like, someone harshed their buzz by doing something criminal. That's how they act. Like, they were forced to do it.
So, and so, here's the police union spokesman, which is, you know, a lot of talk about police unions.
Sure.
Cleat, on the left lately.
Cleat comes to mind.
Yeah. A lot of talk about police unions and maybe some people's discomfort with people who organize with police unions. Here's what this person says. We're allowed to punch and we're allowed to kick, police spokesperson Dean Worthington told
me. I think they are the, like, let me say, like, I want to get rid of the, like, utopian point of view. I think most people are okay with the cops, like, beating the shit out of people.
Listen to me.
They think that's part of their job.
I want you to understand.
They're
going to
beat you into like straight. They're going to make you a model citizen.
I'm sure most people are okay with it. I think that I would argue that most people are probably not okay with the kicking the shit out of somebody when they're on the ground.
Oh, yeah.
I think, like, that's a, listen, that is a dishonorable thing to do in the streets. Now, I'm not saying that doesn't happen in the streets. I have been there and seen people get the shit kicked out of them in the street. You know what I mean? But a lot of times, even in the street, people are like, oh, you shouldn't. That was fucked up what you just did there. You know what I mean? Like, yeah. There's social sanctions for doing it in the street. There's agreed. None for the police, though.
Yeah, agreed. Yeah, I think for me, there... I guess I can play devil's advocate at a point, at a certain point, and say like there's a time when you have to arrest somebody. But if I was arresting somebody, I would expect for them to be like pissed and like against the idea. I would expect that they would be tensing up. It's really weird to think that the police would beat somebody up for like tensing up to being arrested, because the first thought when I think about being arrested is tenseness.
I know. That's the thing that bugs me about these things is like resisting is basically
part of it. I don't want to be. I honestly, now that you've sprung it upon me and you've taken my arms and threw them behind my back, I don't want to be arrested. No, I'm very tense about this.
And it should be. You know what? You should get and. Here's the truth, and I know this is going to be controversial among our police officer listeners.
Right.
You should be allowed to resist arrest. That shouldn't even be against the law.
I mean, it makes like a sense. Human it's thing. Human nature. Yeah. For all the people that tell me that, like, if the government fell, they would start raping and pillaging their neighbors, they should at least acknowledge that like, getting arrested is not, like, the preferable situation.
I just can't cool out.
No, I'm not going to be comfortable with that.
Like, those, you see the pictures of the cops that get the guy, they put the hands behind their back, they put, handcuffs on them, and then they jam their knee into the upper part of their back and their neck, and they're like pulling their hair like they have them in like a wrestling fucking submission move, and you're like, I don't know, man. I feel like I gotta resist here. Like, my body's telling me that if I don't resist, you're gonna rip my fucking head off, dude.
Yeah. I have to show like this is a bit much. Right, like even when my older cousins put me in those figure fours and stuff, it's like I have to push back. Like I have to say, you're about to break my shit right now. You're about to fuck me up forever.
Yeah, and it's like they beat the shit out of this guy. This guy has internal injuries and is in the hospital currently.
To be honest, though, man, I heard this from old people before. Like Columbus used to throw people out the back of their paddy wagons, man. They were known for throwing people out of the back of the car, like on the freeway and shit. They really were dirty fucking cops since forever ago.
Oh, I know. Well, we've talked about it before. I never thought they were, but now that we've gone to the People's Justice Project stuff and the Surge stuff, like I hear a lot of people telling stories at those things, and I'm like, dang, these guys have been bad forever. I mean, Brett, you had a hell-raising dad. I didn't have hell-raising. My dad's a kind of a wiener, right? We've
sure.
brought that up lately. Your dad was a hellraiser. He would know what the cops were up to.
Yeah, he knew. He was not trying to be involved with them.
My dad actually called the police on me in the past for being too loud out in front of the house. He's not the type that understands what it's like to deal with the police.
It's really, you know, it's tough, man. I'm not involved in like the extreme radical dialogue online, so I can like in my world where I'm trying to like just have a normal day to day, I can envision a world where somebody has to get involved with these really violent situations. But it's like, why are these cops always doing the fucking worst? You know, they aren't really handling any of this with any sort of grace whatsoever. They've really caved in to all of the worst. Like, in my mind, if I had to deal with a bunch of people that were doing wrong all day, I would eventually come to hate them and like be cruel and all of those things. And then we just sit by while it happens. I don't get it, you know? Like, I just... there is no higher standard for them. Like, well, even like folks on the streets have a higher standard than what the police are held to.
Yeah. And that you've said before on here that it shouldn't be a full-time job. And I've heard other people say that, and I never necessarily
a career.
Agree.
I would say it's a full-time job until
career.
Yeah. It shouldn't be a career.
Well,
you shouldn't retire from the police.
I never really agree with that. And then when you start actually thinking about, like, when I was a cable guy and I was a service technician, I went to 8 people's houses a day whose cable was fucked up. And I just assumed that the cable was the worst cable in the world. Like, this cable sucks. These boxes are all every one of these boxes is a piece of shit and it doesn't work. And all the cable and stuff sucks. And it's like, I never thought about the millions of fucking people or the thousands of people who weren't having trouble, that the things were just working for them. And I think the police do get in the mindset that, like, just everybody in certain neighborhoods, which that
they brings, punishers.
And that brings to, like, the community policing thing where you're like, man, you should just, if they had to live in the neighborhood that they were policing in, I think that would even change just even a little bit. If it was a rule that in order to police a neighborhood, it has to be people from the neighborhood doing that, that even to me sounds like, because
like, the problem is that, like, me and you are dumb shits that are, like, drunk after a show and talking these type of things, but, like, the broader conversation isn't about what role the police have in our fucking lives, you know? Like, that's why we have to go with the all cops are bastards, because it's like, fuck y'all. Like, yeah. What you've put forth as, like, the rule bringers is, like, such a fucking embarrassing thing, you know? Like, it's just not even close to ideal.
Did you see? So the Portland police posted a picture of a pack of batteries spilled on the ground in a park and was like, these people are bringing weapons to this park. And somebody was like, I mean, it could also just be somebody dumped their batteries on the ground.
It seems like someone's backpack fell open.
They were like, these terrorists have started hiding weapons around the park, and so many people
they have fuel cells. They have a 16 pack of fuel cells.
You can wire one of these things up to some C4 and you got yourself a real attack. And I just read comment after comment under it that was, rocks are much cheaper and easier to throw at people. Why would people bring batteries with them when they could just go gather a bunch of rocks to throw? And it's like, well, that's a good damn point. You know?
Well, batteries are like a very throwable object. Like, they feel really great when you hold them between thumb and forefinger and you let one rip, like with a super fucking good spin on it.
You're going to go pay for $15 for a pack of batteries to throw at the police?
Maybe.
I'm not. I don't see that.
My dad told me that pro wrestling changed because people started getting, like, too violent with the heels and stuff, where they started throwing batteries and it was just, like, too much. He was like, I always throw ice cubes at them, but, like, batteries was too much.
Ice cubes. Hey, you know what? That's why I love heels. That's why I admire old time heels. Why when somebody
they
makes
got hit
fun
with
a
barrage of them.
When somebody makes fun of the Iron Sheik, I get what they're laughing at and I understand what's going on. But that dude used to stand in the middle of a room full of people and say, fuck to America, and stuff like that, and get the most visceral amount of hatred from a room of people. Like, grandmas wanted him dead. You know what I mean? And I'm like, that? Beautiful. That's a beautiful thing. Like,
yeah,
I admire
intense.
That.
Yeah, it's way more than what the police are putting up with.
Yeah. So here's another a good racism story for us.
Oh, I love racism
stories.
Well,
you know, you got to throw in the racism stories. In Kansas, an Iraqi-American doctoral student was arrested along with his family after attempting to deposit a large check from the sale of their old house. So, guy sells his house.
Sure.
Goes to the bank.
Right. Deposits. I mean, you got to do that. I mean, if you're going to sell a house, you got to fuck with the banks.
They ain't going to cash it at Kroger or CheckSmart.
No,
that's not the kind of check they can't do.
You can't just get a $4 credit for groceries and get that shit cash.
Hello, check cashing place. Would you mind cashing my $150,000 check?
You said y'all take 6%. Like, go ahead, get in there, take your 6 hundo. It's like, no. We've never dealt with like $100,000 or more ever.
I'm trying to get all this cash in my wallet. I want to walk around. He's supposed to cash it and do the thing where you put it up to your ear.
Money phone. You know, also, well, this just reminded me of this, and it'll pique other people's interest, but there's been like for a while now an issue with taking a whole bunch of cash to go buy a car. Like, if you get pulled over and you're about to go pay $6,000 for like an old ass Audi B4, you know, that like nobody wants, like you're going to, if the police find you with $6,000, they're going to take that shit.
Like they did that Elote man. Did you see what they did to that Elote man? Oh,
yeah, he got
man?
Fucked up, yeah.
Oh, that fucking cop. I look at that cop and I'm like, you fucking son of a bitch.
I know, cop. Because cops are negative at that. The Elote's guy is like a net positive to humanity.
Everybody wants the Elote. You know what
that's the worst part about leaving Texas is no Elote's.
You know what? You know why it's so infuriating? Like, why the cop is able to do that is because we've got everybody convinced that you shouldn't be allowed to eat food made by somebody outside of your house unless the government inspects it.
Well, yeah,
you know what I mean, like those inspection stickers and stuff. Like,
it's old news, but like California, when they allowed people to run a food business and make food out of their home instead of a commercial kitchen, they had thousands of people that overnight registered for a small business. You know,
yeah. Yeah.
Like there are people there's a lot of regulations that keep people from their money. Like, people could be rich as fuck off the shit that they do, but
keep you from being an Elote man.
Sure, you could be the Elote.
He got 54 G's though. They raised 54.
Paleta's guy, man. There used to be so many popsicle dudes in Dallas too that would just walk down the street, and like it seems very fucking lucrative that in the middle of 110 degrees you got a cooler full of popsicles.
It also seems like a positive for the city, like a really good community building exercise in a way. I mean, what's the difference between Elotes and paletas and a fucking dude that drives through in his weird ice cream truck selling freezer burned like cones with a gumball in the bottom of it, you know?
No, I don't require that my ice cream comes from a Ford Econoline 150.
Do you we've talked about this in the past. It's like Brett and I would eat at a restaurant that wasn't inspected by the government. I would eat, like, I don't care. I don't think that the fact that a guy's going to come in and put a sticker on your window, I don't know how much that deter. Like, the bad guys still get the bad grades. You know what I mean? They still get closed down.
And they keep on moving.
They do. And it's like,
no, I mean, I like the insight, but at the same time, it's like, I mean, if I can take a gander at your operation, like I'm fine with that.
Yeah. If I'm saying that, like, you're not going to need to know if the Elote man has had an inspection. You don't care.
No, I don't care if he washed his fucking hands.
I don't either. I don't.
No, I want that piece of corn.
Give me that corn, motherfucker. That's how I feel, too. I'm like, I don't even care.
No, yeah, I'm not, like, get out of this.
Okay, so according to Wichita State student newspaper The Sunflower, Sattar Ali, who moved to the United States in 1993, took a check for $151,000 from the sale of his family's old house in Michigan to Wichita's Emprise Bank. As he told local news station KAKE, he brought verification documents along with him, but a few minutes after he first presented the tellers with the check, he was in handcuffs. So
that's fucking embarrassing. That's why I kneel. That's why I don't pledge allegiance to no motherfucking flag. Because you fucked up my boy like this. He's doing everything right. He's selling his house. He's got way more than I got. He's got way more motherfucking money. He's selling his house and shit. What is wrong with this situation? Why are they interjected in this?
Listen to this, though. After being taken outside, Ali discovered his wife, Hadil, and their 15-year-old daughter, Hara, were in the backseat of a police car waiting for him.
I'd go fucking nuclear, man. I'd go to jail for 10 years if you put my daughter in handcuffs.
Because you cashed a check.
Right.
Because you cashed 151. Oh, this. No. You are not allowed to have $151,000. Fuck. That makes you, I mean, that wouldn't happen to us, though.
No, that's nothing. I don't have to deal with that.
If I went and cashed a $151,000 check, they would take me back into a back room and shake my hand and show me how they put it in the vault.
Yeah, they would
give
make
my
you
daughter a sucker.
They'd and, make you a 33rd degree Mason.
Yeah, they'd give my wife a magnet. They'd be like, here's a magnet and a bottle opener and a lunchbox. It's like, great doing business with you, Mr. Quinby, you know? This guy goes, they arrested his whole family just because he had money, Brett. Just because he had money. That was, he was Iranian and he had money.
That's bullshit, man.
I know.
That's
I know.
Fuck up. That's,
and then people are like, get over it, you know? It's not, hey, you know what, man? There's no, racism's over. You know what I mean? Oh, did I ever own a slave? I don't fucking think so. It's like, yeah, you supported a lot of bombings of people from Iran, you know what I mean? And then this guy comes to the country, he's in grad school, he's trying to do some right shit, he's got a family, he just
he's
sold a house.
Right. Yeah, I mean, that's why I don't subscribe to any of this, because at the end of the day, the folks that ham and haw and talk all this garbage about the type of shit they buy into this American society is like, it just doesn't play out in any sort of way that makes sense to me. Like, I'm not into this. Fuck
listen
this,
to
man.
Even this, dude. Listen to even this. And this is key to understanding, like, the people's mindset that like, how much racism there is for Arab American people, you know, is in the end, Ali, who along with his wife and children are American citizens, lived in Wichita from 1998 to 2008 and was returning to get his doctorate in engineering from Wichita State, where his eldest son is a freshman. He said the arrest marked the first time feeling unwelcome into Kansas City. And he did every single fucking thing that like they think immigrants should do. Every single became a fucking citizen, right?
Well, I mean that's what we've gotten to. It's just awful that we're going up against people that want to deny these folks like their chance to just be a part of the fucking, you know, be a part of our society, you know?
How about just they want to ignore these, like, the thing that pisses me off the most about it really is ignoring their experience and making it sound like Arab people, Arab American people are whiners, and that like they don't buy into our society, and it's like, well, I mean, every fucking turn you try to make them feel like a fucking outsider.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah. I mean, it's the same with, like, you know, the way that black folks talk about having to do things 10 times better. I mean, that's the society that we're in. It's awful to be a part of, you know, the folks that are still laying that down, because there is a lot of talk. People think that we've gone too far. We're too progressive where we're at right now, you know? And it's like, we're not even close to being like just cool with people that want to buy a house and sell the motherfucker, which seems like a regular thing to do. There's like a lot of TV shows about buying houses and selling the motherfucker. So I don't know anybody, whatever their ethnicity is, like, if they have a house and they're trying to sell it, it seems completely fucking normal to me.
House flipping, motherfucker. They're
house
mad
flipping
the
makes sense.
House flipping, you know
yeah.
what I mean?
I'd actually love to be house flipping.
Did you see that recently they came out with, like, some study came out and they said the real reason for that crash and the 2008 crash or 2009 crash was house flipping, motherfucker?
Bullshit.
They was out there house flipping.
No, it was robo-sign.
Well, okay, so
that was
that's true. You're
they
right.
had people, like, copying signatures on the window. They were using the daylight to copy a signature over to get somebody's approval on some shit that was experimental in the financial world.
That's what I used. I did that with my parents' signature when I was in high school. I did the window
thing. Who was it? Homewood? It was like Home something. It was Hedgewood or Homewood. There was some, like, they went under, but it was named after a tree, and it was just, yeah, like, so fucking fake.
That was so I guess we have one more story that kind of is in that direction of racism and stuff like that that I wanted to get out this week. You know, the call-in show, we got to get through stories because we don't do the call-in show, you right. know? And I wanted to, a video posted to Facebook shows an Ohio police, fucking Ohio cops.
I know,
dude.
They're
what
bad.
What are their deal? Police officer acknowledging that he trailed a driver because the driver made direct eye contact with him before giving the man a warning. Motorist John Felton recorded the August 15th incident on his cell phone and uploaded the video to Facebook. In the recording, the officer said he was issuing a warning to Felton for not signaling more than 100 feet before making a turn. He acknowledged during the incident that Felton did actually use his turn signal, but not early enough. Throughout the exchange, Felton repeatedly says the officer followed him for 2 miles before catching the infraction. And then here's what the cop says. Well, I watched you trail me the whole time. And I don't know why. Here's him. This is Felton, right? This is the guy that's getting pulled over. I watched you trail me the whole time, I said. I don't know why this cop is I don't know why this cop's behind me. He was in the car with another passenger. He's like, you just needed to pull me over. Is there a reason other than that? And at one point when the officer briefly returned to his patrol car, Felton referred to the videotape to a recent incident. But he bring it up. He's like, I'm not going to get Sandra Bland. He's like, I'm not going to get... That's exactly what he said. He said, he ain't about to Sandra Bland me.
When the cops, which is unfortunate.
Well, hey, that's what you... That is what has to happen. If you're a black dude and you get pulled over by a cop for not signaling 100 feet before your turn, for not signaling early enough, you have to think that that cop is going to fucking kill you and yeah. stop. That sounds like the recipe for getting fucking killed.
Well, and even if it's not, if it's like premeditated murder, it's just that they're on edge to the point where they're like, it's 2 a.m. and I'm pulling over somebody that's probably a fucking junkie that's on the edge of murder, you know?
Yeah.
Like, they've hyped themselves up so much where it's like, remember that dude that got shot in the middle of the fucking street with his arm? He was laying on the ground and they just shot him because the guy was like, I'm just super nervous right now.
Yeah.
You know, like, yeah. Sorry for shooting you.
Yeah. Listen to this, though. After several minutes of back and forth, the officer said he previously noticed Felton look at him, and that's why he followed him. Because you made direct eye contact with me and held on to it when I was passing you, said the officer. That's why he pulled the guy over, actually. He told the damn guy, you made direct eye contact with me and held it while I passed you.
He rolled up with the flashlight. He rolled up with the flashlight, and the window goes down. Hey, man, you were looking at me weird as shit back there. You doing something bad right now?
You shouldn't be a cop if you're that worried about somebody. Like,
did he blow through a stop sign? Like, what really is going on here? I mean, just because he looked at you, I don't know.
Is that
what it is now? It's like, and then I also feel like the next night he wrote out a report where he was like, motherfucker wouldn't even look at me, wouldn't even make eye contact with me. I had to pull him over.
I mean, right. I used to have this libertarian teacher who used to talk about how, like, cops can pull you over for almost anything. They can even pull you over for strict adherence to the law. Like, if they see you, they're like, oh, that's suspicious. This motherfucker is following all the laws.
Yeah, he did 100 meters exactly before that red light. He turned on his turn signal.
And you know what, though? When we're driving out of town and shit like that, every single time we pass a state highway patrolman or a cop on the freeway, I think I'm going to get pulled over.
Yeah, I mean, you're always checking the rear view.
They have me that scared. Like, they really, like, and like, for some reason, I don't get scared here because it's at home. And I think it's maybe just because I know where all the cops are around here and I kind of have an idea for what I can get away with, where this is my home, you know? But, like, I imagine that, like, if you're a black male or even a woman or an Iranian guy that's cashing a check, you absolutely just you got to be more scared, because I just think I'm going to get a ticket or maybe a drug charge. I mean, like, the chances of you getting killed because you held eye contact with a cop has to do so much to your psyche. It's fucking crazy that these conservatives, like,
fly blue line butterfly.
Yeah, yeah, that they can't fucking understand why people get jumpy when the police come up on them. That's fucking scary, dude. And it's like, it seems like they're expecting people to walk a fucking tightrope. They're expecting black men to walk this
and
really...
And Sandra Bland, women, too.
Yeah, yeah. But, I mean, they're expecting them to walk this really tightrope that it almost seems impossible that they can win. You know, if they're too nice, they're going to get dragged out of the car. The whole car is going to get searched, and it's going to just be a really long thing. If they're too confrontational, they're going to get dragged out of the car. The car is going to get searched, and they might get shot in the head. And it's like, well, I mean, how am I, what am I supposed to do? You know, how am I supposed to act? Like, these motherfuckers get nervous because they smell marijuana in a guy's fucking car. You know?
Yeah, and my car constantly has marijuana in it.
Yeah.
Like, I'm constantly operating a vehicle on marijuana.
And they don't fucking... Dude, they don't give a shit about you.
No.
They don't give... You have a neck tattoo.
Well,
and no, they don't give a fucking shit what you do.
I don't know, man. No, to be honest, though, like, since I moved back from Virginia, my tags have been super illegal. So I've been playing this game where, like, if a police are behind me, I have to, like, take the next exit or turn down a road because I cannot have the cops behind me start running my numbers. I'm close to fixing it.
No, but I understand what you're saying.
No, that's not.
If you were riding legally, is what I'm saying. I know. If you were legally driving, right?
No, there's nothing. Like, I can do whatever I want.
I can't do. I could have fucking driven by this cop and fucking been like, flipped him off when I was going by. And he might have, maybe.
No, I flipped off a cop one time when I was a kid. He pulled me right over.
Oh, really?
Literally going down the road, we were like, we're going to the speed limit. They can't do shit. And we all were like giving him the middle finger. And he just like bucked a Yui and was right on us, like searching us. He just, we had no weed on it. We had nothing. We had nothing on us. He searched the entire car, couldn't get anything from us, just, well, like, gave us a talking to, basically.
What did he say? You need to respect me, young men, okay? I'm sick and tired of young teens driving by me and sticking their middle finger up at me. You know, blue lives fucking matter.
Buddy. We weren't in Blue Lives Matter times. That's where we're at now.
He wasn't a Punisher yet. If he would have been a Punisher, y'all would have gone to jail.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I guess, like, I am a... Like, I got, maybe I'm liberal enough to imagine a world where I could see, like, a police department that is kind of on the level and deals with people in a very humane way. But it's just not, it's obviously not what we have. You know, like, that's what really, I think I don't want to be partisan and I don't want to create, like, these big rifts and juxtapositions. But it's like, come on, there really are fucking up on the regular. Like, they're not doing the job properly. We have a lot of evidence. We have a lot of people that are spending their time to put this message out there. I don't know how to get through to people, you know?
They need to be stripped of so much power. I mean, there's just...
Yeah.
The power needs to just... The power balance is fucking crazy, you know? Yeah, I just don't know if they're reformable at
no,
all.
No, I mean, they have
really
to be gone. I mean, what
are.
We have now, I mean, there's no way... The people that are working within the organization, they're not willing to do the work. Like, nobody is serious about changing it for the good.
They don't think they need any work.
No, they don't.
And
they think it's unfortunate that these situations happen, but they don't see that it's a part of, like... Their culture and the way that they structure everything.
Well, and they see it as getting their dick sawed off, really. When they kick the shit out of somebody and send them to the hospital, they're like, oh, you bunch of fucking whiners out there. You know, I gotta do law and order when I'm out here on the streets, and you're just whining. You don't know what the job's like. It's like, shouldn't be your job.
Yeah, I don't think that guy needs an extra elbow in the neck. I don't think someone needs to be body slammed.
No, you don't need to whoop somebody's ass. So I got this story from NBC4 out of New York. So y'all got a 4 too. I like it. There's an NBC4 here. There's an NBC4 in New York. Okay, here we go. God, these news is so hard to read these days. Parents of students at a New Jersey high school were ordered to get their children's blood and urine tested after a can of beer was discovered at a football game.
Oh, God, no. Not that. Not the thing that is on all of our young adult television shows. Not like the thing that has been a part of all of our lives.
A cracking open a cold one with the boys.
Yeah. That, oh my goodness. That's never happened before. Our six-pack Joe fathers never would have drank a beer at the football game.
How fucking stupid are these people? This is why New York City is poisonous. It's New Jersey.
Oh, New Jersey.
It is New Jersey.
They're trying to be New York City, though. That's why they're doing it.
The can of beer reportedly landed on the ground and was spotted by a school official during a game at Randolph High School on Friday night. It's unclear if the can was thrown or fell. I bet it fell.
Yeah, somebody was probably too soused.
But it came from the bleachers filled with students, according to a letter from Randolph superintendent.
Kids drinking beer, not like the same way that we drank beer when we were kids. That would be horrible. How would they ever grow up to be adults just like us?
And you would think like, if I was like 19, I'd be like, fucking teachers don't know nothing about getting drunk.
That's true.
Like that. Now,
yeah, they gave it up.
I get fucking sauce. I get fucking stoned as shit with teachers all the time.
That's true. Teachers do know how to party.
Teachers are fun as shit to hang out with, man.
Yeah, they're very free spirited.
The superintendent, Jennifer Fano, who said that some of the students appeared drunk and that several additional open containers of alcohol were later discovered. After the can of beer was found, about 75 students who were in the bleachers were taken to classrooms as school officials contacted parents so that they could pick them up. Each student was given a form, a rule-out test requiring blood and urine samples.
Disgusting.
Yeah, 75 fucking kids.
Jesus Christ, folks. Stop it. You've gone too far. When somebody's like, oh, we could just take everybody's blood and piss and figure this thing out. We could just get a hair sample. It's a fucking beer at the game. Parents, that's what we're here for. When you watch games, you drink beer. These kids are just following in your footsteps, you dummies.
Yeah. Parents were given 2 hours to get to health facilities in Morristown, Dover, and Denville their children could be screened.
I'm going to get arrested for this someday. If this happens in my town, I'm going to be in jail. I'm going to do this shit over the phone.
like one of those the
Diddy's
rappers.
Guy. Yeah, yeah, Diddy's dude that fucking took the gun charge for him.
Like Mac Dre.
Yeah.
Or you'd be doing a Mac Dre episode of Street Fight. The students face suspension from school if they didn't complete the screening. Was 75 of them, dude. They took 75 teens and took their pee-pee and their blood to make sure to figure out which ones drank needle. The beers.
Like, you don't get blood. Like, they put a needle in their arm.
They did. They put a needle.
They fucking took a needle to them.
Yeah. Yeah. Some parents were outraged by the incident. In the end, fewer than 5 students tested positive for alcohol, according to DailyRecord.com. Everyone was just so confused. Miscommunication, said parent Stephanie Pangaro. As a parent, you're going to defend your child to the fullest when you know
they're innocent.
No, you're not.
You had the chance. You had your motherfucking chance. Stand up. This is the chance.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think I would let the school take.
No, fuck you, man. I would tear that form up.
Yeah, yeah.
I would teach my kid about, like, not doing shit. Like, even if it gets you. Yeah, fuck that. I would tear that form up.
If a student tested positive for alcohol, his or her parents had to pay for the test, while negative tests were covered by the Board of Education, according to District Policy New Jersey. That's fucking crazy. Like, and if it's a parent that can't afford to pay for the fucking test, it's a beer.
You still got to put $85 on your debit, right? Like, you're still on the line for $85, right?
Yeah. Superintendent Fano released a follow-up letter Wednesday in which she apologized to the parents and kids who were inconvenienced by going to the emergency rooms for screenings, but she said she stands by the decision of staff to carry out the procedure at the game. It's one of those, we talked about this last week when I talked about the courtroom with the satanic people, you know? It was like, they didn't feed. Do you all really think they?
Right.
Like, is everybody in
this
room?
We're about to send people to jail for feeding sharks for feeding babies to sharks.
Yeah.
We're about to like put a needle in a whole bunch of our children's arms because a beer fell over at a football game. You know which one of your kids was on the beer, right? Like the beer kids, their families dealt with that.
And so this is their justification too. Fano also said social media video later surfaced showing kids drinking at pregame parties, a video that has since been turned over to the police.
Social media sucks, man.
What are you supposed to... I mean...
These kids are just supposed to do Red Bulls, man. Like, that's the only drug they can do that's approved by the school. The school has, like, Red Bull vending machines. So, like, if they want to get wings, like, they can do that on their Snapchat. But they can't do nothing else.
Yeah. Teenage drug use and alcohol abuse is a national epidemic. No, it's not.
It's not. It's
and
going
Randolph
down.
Is certainly not like
make weed legal and make the drinking age 18. All of a sudden, kids won't want to do it.
Yeah, I don't think the drinking age ever goes back. I don't know who runs on that platform, especially because a lot of weed activists have.
they demonized alcohol.
They've been trying to dim alcohol's light to make weed's light burn brighter.
Yeah, it's a bad strategy.
We've been against that strategy from the beginning, by the way. I've always said, don't do the alcohol. Don't do the weed as safer, because there's a lot of motherfuckers that just want to get off work and chug a fucking 10% IPA. Okay? Is that a big number? Did I get one right?
Yeah, that's great.
A good 10% IPA, yeah, and just fucking...
Double. That's like a double IPA.
Dull the shit out of their brains and fucking pass out in front of the TV screaming at a football player.
Yeah, I think we should be fighting more for... Yeah, like, you know, we should have other stuff that's as great as alcohol be legal. That should be the argument.
It's 18 fucking years old, Brett. I mean, if these kids were even 16 or 17... I'm fucking fine with it, dude.
I am too.
Alcohol is in the fucking store, man.
That's the thing, is that, like, we also, it's really shitty because I'm not anti-booze, but I also have, like, the most contentious relationship with it because it is, like, the most poisonous of some of the drugs that I do regularly. And, like, the way that we treat it with kids is totally
wrong.
It's like so bad, like even with my parents, with like elders, with you know, the people at school, any other adult I meet is not having like an honest conversation about booze and the role that it plays in like modern life. I mean, everybody's off the booze, you know.
Yeah.
Either you do booze and you feel great, or you're not doing booze and that makes you feel great.
That's true. It is. It's like booze does have like that double edged thing where it's like, hey man, I've been quitting booze. I quit booze for a couple weeks. I'm feeling pretty good.
Oh my God. Round of applause, Brian. This is so great. You're new you. You're glowing right now. You're thinning out even. Like you're wasting away. You're almost 2D.
And then when you get drunk again, they're like, damn,
I love
dude,
you dude.
Are the most fun, motherfucker. Damn.
You guys smash this chair on your back.
People always try to everybody wants me to get drunk in my life. Like sometimes.
Yeah, people are always like, you should try booze again.
No, I don't want to. What would I try? If you're a listener and for somebody that absolutely hates every single kind of alcohol, maybe you can give us shoot us a line at one of our Twitter accounts. Maybe there is one that I would like.
That Mountain Dew booze is good.
Made my wife sick as shit, though.
Oh,
really
no.
Kicked her ass the next day.
It's a lot, but it's like 7%. It's really high alcohol, but it's Mountain Dew booze. It's not so bad.
I thought it was 5%.
Is it?
Yeah, it's
5%. I thought it was, oh, okay.
All right. I gotta go. Just let me know. I'm not gonna drink the Mountain Dew though. I don't need that much.
No, you shouldn't.
Like, would you want to drink a 6-pack of pop? Which, by the way, they're bringing back Jolt, my friend.
Oh, I would love that. That made my legs go numb for the first time in my life.
Let's get a six pack and drink it during the show.
Yes, that's like the first intense drug experience I've had in my life.
Me
was
too.
Off Jolt Cola.
My brother and I bought 6 packs and drank 4 each, like sitting and watching like fucking roller games, which was like a roller derby game with a figure eight and a ramp.
The
and
70s would?
No.
The LL Cool J would?
No, this was in the 90s. The early 90s. They had a figure eight. There was a ramp. There was also a wall that you could go up. And if there was a tie, they would put an alligator out on the,
on the field of play. Yeah, that was good times. That was back when kids could drink beer at a football game, I think.
A drugged up alligator. They would throw a fucking alligator on sedatives out into the thing with his teeth all clipped to amble around on the course.
Yeah, I mean, that's a great way to drum up excitement.
It is. I was like, oh, fuck, I hope the alligator. They only did it once. It was like, damn. Remember, my brother and I would stay up late every Saturday and be like, damn, dude, remember when they did the alligator one? Hopefully they do the alligator one.
Yeah, you have that promise of an alligator show going down.
Let's talk about a radio guy that got himself in trouble, Brett.
I also have to say, I'm still discouraged. I'm going to journal about this, but like, we got to figure out how to on-ramp kids to booze. And like, a football game is a great reason for them to drink a beer. Like, one.
Yeah, that's, I mean, I get the idea that like, because of the way we raise our kids around booze, it's scary when high school kids take it upon themselves and hide and drink.
Yeah.
It is. I don't ever, like, my wife and I had this conversation again, like, we always reiterate this with each other every time. It's like, man, if she gets to 17 or 18 and she wants to try something, I'm going to make a place where she can try that.
Sure.
You know, because
setting, bro, that's the Psychonauts code.
Yeah. And she's going to do it no matter what. You can't. I say this a lot about like, because we've been talking a lot about nu metal, right? And the kids' parents would hear them listening to like Korn or something or Marilyn Manson, and they'd break the tape and get rid of it. But that kid always fucking got the tape or the CD back
right
in their house and listened to it. They just knew that they had to be more careful with
sure,
it.
Sure, right? Sure.
And it's the same thing with drugs and alcohol. It's like, there was nothing an adult could have said to me that would have prevented me from trying drugs and alcohol when I was a kid. I wanted them and I got them. And there's a certain percentage of people out there that just, they want them. It's just, I guess we're, I don't even know what it is. I don't even like to say rebellious, because I don't necessarily think doing drugs is a rebellious thing. I think some of it is self-care. You know what I mean? Doing things like hallucinogens and sometimes marijuana. I mean, that shit makes me feel great, man.
Yeah.
I feel like sometimes my head is in a really dark place. And when I'm on marijuana, my head generally pops out of that dark place.
I'd be a serial killer without weed. Like, if I wasn't smoking weed, I would just be like hunting people down in the middle of the night and butchering them and then going to bed.
I do remember when you were in Dallas and DC for those first few weeks, me and you would talk and you'd be like, I fucking don't know what's going on.
I feel hard like a rock. Yeah. Sorry.
Yeah, yeah. I don't know what's fucking going on. I'm just pissed off all the time. And like, guys, Brett is like the nicest dude in the world, but when he's pissed off, he's fucking terrible. He is mean. He's like a pit bull. He's a little pit bull with a neck tattoo.
I feel it just hardens me. I feel like that, like, I have a negative outlook that I was brought up with, and that it just hardens me. I feel like I'm turning into stone at some point, and then like that reefer, like that sweet leaf, really just like loosens me up.
Yeah, like it does. It makes my shoulders feel less tense.
Right.
It just makes me feel like it makes, honestly, too, guys, it makes TV better. That's the real thing.
Like, yeah, and that's what I was mostly doing was TV. And that's what most people are doing is TV. Like, if you're just doing TV, if you're going to work and doing TV as your life and you don't have weed involved, like, what are you doing really? Are you really living? Like, you're not maximizing your potential here.
And that should also be fine with people.
Yeah.
That is like a perfect, that's what I always say about pills too. People are like, yo, these fucking people doing this Oxycontin and stuff, they go to work and they come home and then they do the damn Oxycontin and then they watch TV and stuff. And you're like, okay. I mean, I don't give a shit if somebody wants to watch 4 episodes of The Big Bang Theory after work and scratch their fucking nose.
Well, yeah, and there was a lot of really weird laws in Texas about like when you can sell booze. Milwaukee was the same way, and it seems like a lot of it is like getting people out of the house. Like, you have to go to the bar to buy the booze, but if you're just doing drugs at your house, like, you're not consuming very much at all. Like, you just buy your snacks and then you chill out and you don't really go out there and incur all of these charges and transactional fees, you know. You're not generating any tax revenue.
Yeah, yeah. You're right, man. So what we're saying is legalize booze for teens.
Actually, yes, exactly.
The real thing, when we've talked about this before, man, Brett and I can start a company that mentors young drug kids and like gets them in a healthy state of mind before they get there. Like if you find out, you think your kid is 14 years old and you're like, this kid's 14, I think they want to do drugs, I'm going to take them to Street Fight Inc. and they're going to talk to them. What I'm going to say to them, Brett, wait a couple years. Just, you don't need it right now. Now is not the time. Your brain is already fucking crazy with all kinds of hormones and stuff. You need to be focusing on what you're doing. Maybe wait a little bit. You know, the real thing you do is you keep pushing it off. You know, you just keep saying like, look, I know that one day you want to try this. Just hold off on it a little bit. Just wait just a little bit. And then you get them to 17 or 18. And then you're like, you want to drink some puckers? You want to drink some sour apple puckers, my friend?
I think I really feel like instead of taking those 75 kids and putting a needle into them, you take them and you put them into our program, and then we'll sift through. We're going to sift through and figure out who had that beer. And then we'll give them a talking to and kind of show them what's up and say, you know, football is a great reason to drink. I have to say, like, if the boys are out there on the field, you got to be drinking. Like, that's the only way to enjoy that shit.
The boys on the field want nothing more than you to be out
there
drinking.
They want you to be rowdy. They want you to be uproarious. So maybe for special occasions, like you know, if you're at camp and somebody sneaks in some tequila, you should definitely go throw up by the lake and stuff.
Yeah,
but don't make it. Yeah. I mean, you don't
like
have
a, like a summer camp we could have for 17-year-olds
to just practice drinking.
Yeah, 16 to 17 years old. If I'll tell you what, if you're born in the last 6 months of the year, 16, but then 17 years old, you can come to Brett and I summer camp. We're gonna get you squared away on, like, so we'll do a week with, like, okay, you're gonna have beer, we're gonna eat dinner, and then we're gonna have a beer, and then later on two, three beers around a campfire, and then later on we're all gonna whip up some waffles, and then you can go to bed. That's what we did.
Yeah, that's great on ramping.
Drink that shit slow, and just we're gonna move on, and then
you can find out what it's like to not throw up on alcohol.
Yeah, the next week it's like we'll vape a little, because I don't want to smoke these young kids' lungs up. But you just vape just a little bit of weed, and then sit down with them, be like, "So how are you feeling? You know, would you like to listen to some jazz music?"
Sure. You want to hear a fart joke?
And then on the last week,
crossfade them. You got to make them do
both. Crossfade. Because, I guess they don't need to have mushrooms yet. They can wait a couple years.
College, man. You got to do that shit in a grungy basement.
I got to tell you, man, I feel like the only time I got a lot out of hallucinogens was in my 30s. Because, like, the stuff I did early on was, woo. That seems like grown folks' drugs. It's like kind of like those old people that sit on a front porch in a rocking chair and sip that apple pie moonshine. That's what we'll call mushrooms now.
Yeah, when you're like comfortable with your gray hairs and you're just like living in it, like you're totally owning your existence.
When,
like,
you don't care that you're bald. I mean, like balding, like when you're not worried about that anymore, it's a good time.
Yeah, the biggest testament for mushrooms is they give those to cancer people, and they're like, "I don't fucking die. I don't care." Like that's a part of life. Like it just transitions you over where you're just comfortable with everything. But yeah, kids end up doing that. That's another one, man. Kids end up doing it in the most precarious circumstances.
I know.
You're stuck in a cornfield and you're afraid to talk to any adult that could possibly help you feel comfortable because you think they're going to ground you or put you in jail or tell your parents.
I always go back to this story from when I was 15 years old, the summer between the 9th and 10th grade. This friend of mine, his parents went out of jail. We had a party there, and it was like a fill the bathtub, Or no,
it was, Harry Buffalo?
No, it wasn't a fill the bat. It was, we had a lot of liquor. Like, this guy's sister could buy it, and she went and got us a lot of fucking bottles. Like, as a bunch of dumbass teenagers with an allowance that used all of their allowance money on liquor and Doritos, basically, and Taco Bell. And this friend of mine fucking got so drunk, Brett, that he was laying in the bathtub, throwing up all over himself. Finally, he had set this up so his parents would pick him up from the party, which, don't know why he made that decision.
Yeah, it doesn't seem like they should be in there any sort of the proximity of this situation.
Not the best plan for a teenager. Sure. He set it up so that his parents would pick him up. We picked him up and took him outside and just dropped him on the fucking curb. And he just slept there until his parents came and picked him up. And then when he got, basically, he told his parents he had food poisoning.
Oh.
And they believed it, and he got away with it. But, well, they did.
Denial parents, man. Denial parents are like a really premium. You don't have denial parents anymore. We got Google and shit. Like, we can't just go in denial anymore.
I had them too, man. I talked to my parents once on LSD. My brother had older brother got in a little bit of trouble. And I went and I had to tell my parents that something happened while I was tripping, and they didn't know. People have passed out in front of them, but I think they did know. I always think that they know.
They had an inkling.
Yeah.
But they were just like, well, I guess if I ignore it, they'll be fine with that. Yeah, I don't know. It's and this also, this like rowdiness and all of this does relate to like the police stuff in a way where, like, you know, you have a chance to be completely fucking wild and you know, other people don't.
Yeah.
In that way.
Yeah. Yeah. So I wanted to do this radio, this morning radio guy got in trouble. He's like a sports talk radio guy. And I always think it's funny when those guys get in trouble, you know?
Well, they can't help but do it.
WFAN morning radio host Craig Carton was busted Wednesday in a $5.6 million Ponzi scheme.
Jesus.
The authorities say took money from deep-pocketed investors
for
a sham concert reselling business that he used to pay off massive personal gambling debt.
I heard about this.
The co-host of the Boomer and Carton show, he gets to
co-host Boomer and Carton, like Brett and Brian.
Boomer Esiason is his co-host.
Oh, really?
This dude does a show with Boomer fucking Esiason, dude. And I could have been named Boomer. One of us could have been.
You think so?
We're both bees.
You could have been a Boomer?
We're both bees. We could have. Damn it. Boomer and Brett. Brett and Boomer.
Both work.
Yeah, either way. The co-host of the Boomer and Carton show with ex-Jets quarterback Boomer Esiason, ex-Bengals quarterback.
Yeah, he's a Bengals. He's a Bengal. He's still a fucking Jet.
You don't get
Are you
Jets,
for real?
You motherfuckers.
He did his best work as a Bengal.
He allegedly promised investors huge profits for funding the purchase of tickets to shows by pop stars including Adele, Justin Bieber, Katy Perry, and Barbra Streisand.
Good move. That's like the best concerts to sell, right?
Right. To rich people. Who gives a shit?
Yeah.
You know? Carton, 48, and strip club exec Michael Baugh. These guys, Michael White, 41. These guys were, this is a crew.
Party is.
Strip club executive.
We get
morning radio host hanging around with each other.
We get the $8 million from them. We tell them we're going to buy Adele tickets with it, man. They don't care. They're rich.
I love Ponzi schemes a little bit.
Yeah, they're
bit.
Great.
Like, I hate to see like people lose everything and then have to struggle for the rest of their lives. But a lot of times Ponzi schemes, they usually get like real dinguses, you know, like rich dinguses, right?
Yeah. Yeah. I feel like there's a crowd of people that make over $100 million a year that they get. Like, that's the real Ponzi schemes. I mean, three card money on the street is one kind of hustle, but there's a lot of investment scams that you could do that I feel like, I mean, you were dumb. Look who you gave your money to. Like, why didn't you research that more, you know?
This motherfucker was ripping people off that were trying to go see Hamilton, too. Like, it says the Securities and Exchange Commission, which, by the way, they're getting involved in concert ticket scalping stuff. This seems like an innocent enough thing. I don't know why I think that. The Securities and Exchange Commission also filed a related suit against Carton and Joseph Mel, 43, who was busted earlier this year in a scam involving tickets to the Broadway blockbuster Hamilton and concerts including last year's classic rock Desert Trip Fest in Indio, California. Court papers say Carton, who racked up around $3 million in gambling debts to various casinos and other third parties. That shit only happens in New York, right? Like, can you come up $3 million in debt in Columbus, Ohio on some gambling debts? Do you think that's even possible?
No, the casino in town wouldn't probably let you go over $100,000. I don't even think they would let you do $10,000 around here.
Where did bookie? Is there a bookie in Columbus, Ohio? Please don't answer that question.
Yeah, there is.
You get Brett a bookie, then he's gonna.
No, there definitely is. That's just a fact of life.
He kicked off the con on August 31st, 2016, when he sent both men an email lamenting how he had significant debt that is coming due. 5 days later, Wright, chief relationship strategist for the company that runs the Sapphire brand Jiggle Joints in New York City and Las Vegas, allegedly wrote back with 8 possible plans to deal with the problem. Run to Costa Rica. Change your name and start a new life all over again may not be an option was among his suggestions, court papers say. Instead, Carton used phony documents with forged signatures to make it look like he and Mel had access to $15 million worth of Adele tickets at face value from her management company, the Fed said. On September 6, 2016, Carton convinced an unidentified individual investor to fork over $1 million, most of which Carton immediately wired to a pair of casinos and a person he owed $825,000 to.
See, this all squares with me. I'm okay with a world where like the SEC doesn't have to chase guys down like this. You just got fleeced. Like if you think you're so badass at investing and you got all this money because you're such a good investor, you should have known who the fuck you were dealing with, you know? Like I feel like this guy made his money. Like he has a different business. Like,
Me too. Carton also allegedly scammed a hedge fund, which he signed a $10 million revolving loan agreement on December 8th, 2016.
This is you signing a piece of paper that says you're going to give this guy $10 million. If you didn't research who the guy you gave $10 million to, that's on you. I don't feel like you should have any sort of guarantee on that.
He never used any. Bought a concert ticket. But I mean, again, if you rip $10 million off of somebody, fuck them. I don't even care. You know what I mean? Like, isn't that part of like the way they do? Isn't there risk?
That's what I'm saying. That's exactly business. What I'm saying. Like you have to. This is taking a chance, and these people want guaranteed. This is what equates to all of like the financial Wall Street, Harvard economic bullshit. Is that they all want guarantees on their money that they'll never lose it, and they fucking get it. Most of the laws and most of the things protect them from ever, having to own up to handing over $10 million to some fucking porno executive.
Yeah. And you know, this story gets so fucked up here in a minute. But after getting the hedge fund to wire another $2 million directly to an entertainment venue company and convincing that company to return it to him, Carton used his personal credit card as part of a ruse to keep his scheme going, court papers said.
So yeah, that's how it works.
He knows he's fucked, right? He knows they're about to get him. And he was like, I gotta fucking do
Hail Mary. I'm gonna get a 24.99% cash ATM withdrawal from my credit card for $200,000. I'm gonna hand it back to my investors and tell them that's just a piece of the interest that they can expect from their investment.
In February, he bought nearly $850,000 worth of Barbra Streisand tickets and another $16,000 worth of Metallica tickets, but was ultimately unable to resell a significant portion of the Streisand tickets. Oh my God. Oh, God, this is like when all of your financial gymnastics come to roost. You know what? We talk about this a lot of time. This is like when they're like, no, seriously, we're going to fucking repo your car tomorrow.
We're taking it today. Yeah. I'm out here with a truck. Like, if you don't have the money to pay this thing off, you're losing it tonight.
Yeah. Oh, man. Carton. God damn it. I just don't think he should have to go to... It's like he's looking at 45 years in prison.
For being smart, for getting $10 million, which is we celebrate that. If you get $10 million in this country, you're like the highest of society.
And Goldman Sachs and all of those people, they fucking are... they're just as fucking bad as any of these... like, nobody from Lehman Brothers went to prison.
And they did the same thing. Yeah. They took a bunch of other loans. They took a bunch of fake concert tickets and bundled them together and said they were worth a whole bunch of money.
Yep. Yeah. So solidarity with you, Craig Carton.
Yeah,
you're not in the 1%. In order to be allowed to do this stuff, you got to either be in the 1% or you got to be be a politician.
Right.
You can't morning radio host doesn't I know
you got to be in the industry to get away with this shit.
Yeah. A morning radio host, I know you feel powerful because you're making good money, you're in New York, you're on the radio in the morning, people are inviting you out to things and you're able to do all this stuff. It's like
you don't have that like
wrong kind of famous though. There's a certain, like, when we're talking about famous and powerful, there's two levels to be in to get away with this.
Yeah, you need to go to some like human hunting clubs before you can start pulling scams like that.
I fucking wish he would have gotten away with it though. After I wish he would have been able to sell those Barbara Streisand.
That would have been
tickets.
Sick.
That's the, like,
he may. I would rather read a story. I would rather Brian bring a story to me where like a guy bought $850,000 worth of Barbara Streisand's tickets and made $5 million off of it. I would love to tell that story.
What a crazy amount of money. Like, I think he was just like, you know what, man? You know who likes Barbra Streisand? Rich people.
We're going to flip it.
Because for me, it's like, I don't feel like I could sell 10 Barbra Streisand tickets.
That would be a tough sell.
All right, man. What a fun night. This is a fun show.
Yeah. Thank you for tuning in. I hope you appreciate what we do. And that you tune in next week. Check us out. We're on Patreon. If you want to hear more of what we do, we do this 2 times a week. Monday and Friday is when I'm planning on putting the show out. We did a call-in show last time. We do those Sunday at 10 p.m. Eastern time. So if you're around, you can always call in and be a part of the show. But other than that, we're going to get one to you like this every single week as well for perpetuity. I mean, until we die, I think we plan on doing the show. So stick around for that. You can find us on iTunes, Stitcher Radio, and most of the other podcasting apps. And then also, if you want to support the show and what we do financially, we have a setup over at patreon.com, patreon.com/streetfightradio. Go straight there. And you can subscribe for $1 a month for an extra show, $3 for videos, $5 for a zine, $10 for Kratom, or $13 for all of it. It's a great deal, and we suggest you go. At least you go peruse and see what we have to offer. I just put out there the entire Street Fight archive, all 6 years, is available for those $3 a month subscribers. So give that, think about that. Go ahead and think about that before you go to bed tonight, and then in the morning reevaluate whether or not you need like 600 Street Fight episodes more. And we will see you later this week. Peace.
He was running down the street when they shot him in his tracks. About the only thing agreed upon is he ain't coming back. There won't be any trial, so the air won't be clear. There's just two sides calling names out of anger, out of fear. And if you say it wasn't racial when they shot him in his tracks, well, I guess that means that you ain't black. It means that you ain't black. I mean, Barack Obama won, and you can choose where to eat. But you don't see too many white kids lying bleeding on the street. Some town in Missouri, but it could be anywhere. It could be right here on Ruth Street. In fact, it's happened here. And it happened where you're sitting, wherever that might be. And it happened last weekend. it'll happen again next week. And when they turned him over, they were surprised there was no gun. I mean, he must have done something, or else why would he have run? And they'll spin it for the anchors on the television screen, so we can shrug and let it happen without asking what it means. What it means. Some stores, and someone was reminded they ain't called colored folks no more. I mean, we try to be politically correct when we call names, but what's the point of post-racial when old prejudices remain? And that guy who killed that kid down in Florida standing ground is free to beat up on his girlfriend and wave a brand new gun around, while some kid is dead and buried and laying in the ground with a pocket full of skills. What it means.
While we dream, but don't look to me for answers, 'cause I don't.